reading from the Yoga Sutras, Volume 1, Text 16. Chapter 1, Text 16. Tatparam Purusha Kyate Guna Vatribhyam. Higher than renunciation is indifference to the gunas stemming from the perception of the soul. So, a little prayer to give me some inspiration here. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Taksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So, greetings from Moscow. It's early in the morning here, and just a little bit sharing with you my own experience. It's been quite whirlwind. It was a 10-hour flight, and I got in about 10:30 in the morning, and some people picked me up. And I was warned before I came that the traffic in Moscow is unbelievably bad. So I had a very, very nice car, but it wasn't moving. So to go about 40 minutes, it took about 2.5 hours. And really super nice people. They've given us a nice apartment. They've rented out a hall. And we had a nice program yesterday. They even organized to video it. And really nice. I mean, my impression was very nice people came paying. I'd say there were about 60 people there. And the person organizing it, Anna, you know, she even organized that everyone got some prasadam, some nice sweets, really nice sweets, after the program. And when I came in, I was surprised, too, that there was this beautiful art display of about 20, 25 paintings that were done by this Russian artist I know, professional Russian artist who lived in Govardhan. And some of you may have seen in my place upstate, I have this beautiful picture of Krishna and the cows. She's an impressionist painter. And she somehow contacted the organizer, and all around the whole studio, about 25, in my opinion, different people have different tastes, impressionist paintings of Krishna and Govardhan. And it's really, really busy here, but such nice people. And the people were really appreciative. They just milled around and kind of we talked. And some of you want, you'll see the video because they've also done that. And we have a program today. I'm going to do, yesterday when I came in, I did Carmen's Psychology of Karma. Then on Friday, I'll do Yoga of Forgiveness. Then on Monday, same place, we'll do... and from the response, I feel, you know, that these people will come back and bring their friends. And I think mostly professional-type people. Monday, these Yoga Psychology. And on Tuesday, we'll have the Science of Sacred Space, where we'll just describe sacred space and then... really focus on the art and what it expresses. So it's been a good start, and I'm really looking forward to my stay here. And today I'm going to go, and the weekend is all booked up with different people who have, quote, heard of me. Okay. So it's been really nice. And now it's early in the morning here. So let's get on to this. Higher than renunciation is indifference to the modes of nature stemming from perception of the soul. So higher than just staying aloof from the sense objects is becoming completely indifferent to them. And you become completely indifferent to the soul, to the sense objects, when you have a certain level of realization where you can make a discrimination, a clear discrimination between the soul and the body and the mind, the foundation of which is the modes of nature. You have a clear discrimination, and you're imbibing or living within that soul. And therefore, you have absolutely no interest at all. Of course, we even discussed renunciation before as when you, without a craving for the sense objects. You have no craving. But this is even a higher level.
I think you should do it. Hopefully.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, you have to understand, because I'm not in the presenter's mode, because it doesn't work from here in Moscow. I can't mute the people's phones. So we may have the same problem we experienced for years, where people listen by their speaker phones and then we hear their whole house and what's going on. So we'll tolerate that as we did before. So renunciation, there's one level where you're not even craving, but there's another level, and this is a level which is even higher, where you don't even have any identification at all. You're completely free from illusion. So this is going to be, and as you remember, you know, what the beginning of this Yoga Sutra is just describing the definition of yoga in these sutras. And again, remember, a sutra means philosophical concepts that are very, very deep are confined to six words or less as kind of like a thread, a real short, compact aphorism, which is given to help you memorize larger bodies of knowledge and which are unpacked by teachers and commentaries. So just to bring it again in context, it's all about this definition, what yoga is. Yoga, which is the control of the mind. Yoga, chitta, vritti, nirodha, is when the fluctuations of the mind are restrained. So he discussed what is yoga. That was one or two verses. Then what is in, and within that, what is the mind? Then yoga chitta vritti, and then we discussed four or five verses about what is vritti, or the fluctuations of the mind, the type. And now in the last two verses, which is 15 and 16, we are ending the definition of yoga. This is the last verse, and the last two verses discuss which is 16 and 7, is this dispassion or renunciation. Just to make it a little bit clearer, again, it described the vrittis, then how the vrittis are restrained. And it gave a definition, how you control the mind. And this is very classic. It's abhyasa and vairagya. It's practice and renunciation. That's how you control the mind. The mind is difficult to control, Arjuna said, told Krishna. How do you control the mind? It's like the raging wind. Well, it is possible, and this is how it's done. There's a practice, and there's dispassion. And those of us who are engaged in any type of meditation, I assume most of you engage in japa meditation, this is how we control the mind. We have to do sadhana practice. We have to sit in a place, and we do a standard meditation, which is also recommended by Pantanjali, because Ishvara Pranidhan, you can focus on God, and focusing on God means to focus on God's names. And you practice. And what is this? So then he says, so it's two things, practice and renunciation. I think that was verse 12. Then he says, what is this practice? The practice means to fix your mind. So we fix our mind on the holy name. That's the practice. So you fix your mind, this effort. An effort means with vigor, with enthusiasm, with understanding, with feeling. You fix the mind. This is the practice. And as you'll see, when you understand how the mind works, this type of meditation of meditating when you're driving the car, meditating when you're walking around and sightseeing, meditating when you're looking at the computer, it doesn't work. So it says there's two things. There's abhyasa, practice, and vairagya, renunciation. So first he described, I believe, it practice. What's the practice? It's this effort, yatna, this effort, this vigor, this enthusiasm to control the mind. And then it describes, because it's so difficult, well, how does this happen? What is this practice? When does it become firmly established? When your practice or this one point in this becomes firmly established is when it's one, cultivated uninterruptedly. In other words, when you decide to practice, we described this before, this is the concept of a seat of worship, like an asana. And when you're in that position, you don't interrupt yourself. I was just in New York City before I came to Russia, and I stayed overnight at that incredible center on 25 First Avenue with Yagyaprush. And he's really, really decided to cultivate and study the holy name, you know. And he meditates. He sits in the proper way, and he focuses the mind. And when one is serious, that's the way it's done, to get the proper result. And you cultivate it uninterruptedly over a period of time. You want to become established, you have to do it uninterruptedly, and you have to do it uninterruptedly over a prolonged period of time. And if you live your life like that, then you will be able to be situated in that one point, and then the result will come. And, he described that's what practice is. And then in the last verse, he described the first level of renunciation, because there's two levels of renunciation. So he said the first level of renunciation is a controlled mind of one who is without craving. Of course, as we discussed yet last week, I believe with Mahamuni, these type of definitions are, they describe a perfectional state, but the practice is coming to a perfectional state. So you try to give up your craving for the sense objects, and it says whether actually perceived, the ones that are there, or described in the Vedas, it means there are goals of sense objects you can achieve. And a lot of the Vedas was encouraging people to attain Swarga or the heavenly planets by performing Zak. So it's not only giving up what's before you, but giving up the aspiration for what you don't have. That's real renunciate. You give up the craving, not just what's before you, because a lot of people perform austerities, and sacrifice, and this is what a lot of the Vedas has to do, is you perform sacrifice and you give up things with the hope of getting something better. So it renunciation or this kind of dispassion is not only giving up the craving for the objects which you see, but also the ones which you can hope for and you're sacrificing to get. And a lot of the Vedas is that. It's like Hiranyakashipu. We know that, some of us know that story, maybe even most of us. He performed great austerities, but his objective was to get great power. That's not renunciation. You have to give up the craving. See, he really controlled his senses. He was just meditating to the extent that an anthill grew. It describes meditation with thousands and thousands of years. So the anthill grew on his body, and it was eating up his body, but he was still performing the austerity. So imagine what he's given up, but he still had an objective. So that was defined. And it's sequential. The practice leads to the dispassion. And when you get to the level of dispassion, this controlled mind, this lack of craving, that's when you can actually achieve the perfection of yoga, is samadhi. And samadhi is that fixedness of mind, where there's no fluctuations of the mind. The mind is so one-pointed and so fixed. So to get to that point, you have to come to the point of renunciation. And to get to the platform of renunciation, you have to practice. And even at this, again, this is the verse 15 is the first stage. You're giving up the craving from the objects. And the second stage is not only that type of indifference, but you're so fixed in the soul that you have no identification at all with matter. But anyway, it says even at this first stage of renunciation, you become indifferent and you don't become inclined to accept or reject the objects even when available. What it means accept or reject? You're indifferent. So you're not rejecting it. Rejecting it, a real vairagya, means you're meditating on that object. You know, no, 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 no. Real is you're not even, so in the presence of the object, you're not inclined to accept it, and your mind's not overly working to reject it. And you can see someone's described, it describes a Paramahamsa. He has no attachment in his heart, so he's not affected. Even if he's a man, he can be in a room of beautiful naked women. And he's not even affected. This renunciation, you're not even craving. But there's something even higher, which we're going to discuss today. You're just so fixed in the soul that you have no identification with that. This type of discrimination, this type of renunciation, it's supported by discrimination. And that's why we have to hear about these things, to understand that the attachments in this world, the pleasure is temporary, and it leads to distress. There's actually a very, very famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita that it described that, yehi sam sparshaja bhoga dukkha, I forgot it, that pleasures are born from the contact of the senses with the sense objects. They have a beginning and end. So the why, and they are not sources of and they are the sources of unhappiness. Why? Because if you're simply engaged in sensual stimulation, it will eventually degrade the condition of the mind. In other words, happiness is the inner condition of the mind that improves the quality of life. It's not simply the stimulation of the senses. Of course, we can understand this is renunciation. This is very high. We have to get to that platform. To get to that platform, we may have to work through our desires. So our philosophy is not... of course, yoga is, because yoga is dealing with just renouncing the world. But it says how you get there. So in the process of getting there, you're working through your desires. But it's not that, going to school and getting wealth and all the things that we do should be it should be done to keep us peaceful. But where is the effort to work on the inner condition of the mind that improves, really improves the quality of life? Because to improve the quality of life, you have to improve the quality of your mind. So this type of discrimination, these type of things I'm talking about now and are talked about in the Vedas, they help to give you that renunciation. Because you understand that these temporary pleasures are not an absolute correlation with happiness. I'm reading this book called Happiness, The Skill to... It's written by this Buddhist monk, but he's real brilliant. And except for his ultimate conclusions of what he thinks the ultimate... But his understanding of the mind and how it works, and this kind of understanding, the development of the inner condition of mind that improves the quality of life should be our real business. And he gives a quote from the Dalai Lama. Dalai Lama once went, in Zurich or someplace, and there's a high skyscraper, and he made that comment, that notice that, you know, a person whose condition of his mind is not healthy, he could get this new apartment in the middle of New York City, in the middle of Moscow, which would give so much happiness. I know people, I got a new apartment, and it's in the best section of town, and it has a great view. In New York, when you get an apartment, you also buy the space around the apartment that no one could build a building. So you can have a view. So you actually are buying this, and it's so nice to be on that top floor of that penthouse. I can't, you know, when I visit my friend Kastuba, and I walk around the Upper East Side, and I look at all these beautiful buildings, and I don't know why I look at beautiful buildings. I'll never have one. And I'm kind of detached, but I look at them. I say, oh, wow, it'd be nice, you know, to have a real nice apartment in New York. So people think that way. But the Dalai Lama said when you get to the top floor, if your mind is unhappy, you'll only see that window in space as a place to jump through. There's not that absolute correlation. So... one more thing I'll just read, and then this Vijnana Bhikshu, he outlined various stages of detachment, and I think that will be, so he says, one begins by making an effort to break attachment. Then one determines that detachment has been accomplished towards certain objects, while others still need some work. And then when attachment to all the external objects of the senses has been achieved, one begins to target internal attachments. So you go deeper. These include such things as attachment for honor and respect, and their opposite, the dislike of dishonor and disrespect. That's so big. Puja, pratishtha, worship, personal distinction. We're so attached. We may become renounced externally. We're so attached that people see us as great and important and as better. And you can see how it works in the world. Even great yogis, they want to be the most famous guru. What to speak of politicians, you become a senator, it's not enough. You want to be the president, not enough. So one may be externally very renounced and austere, but internally one may be attached to the prestige renunciation can bring, the reputation of being a great yogi, of having many followers. You see this. In this way, so with this type of renunciation, you slowly starve the karmashaya, the storehouse of karma, by giving up the desire for the fruits of actions and by preventing further planting of karmic seeds. Okay, so that was the first level of renunciation. And now briefly we'll discuss the next level of renunciation. Okay, this is complete, not only indifference to sense objects, but the whole material world, the whole guna. This is a very, and this is what we're talking about, yoga. We're talking, as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, it's really a practice. This type of yoga is really a practice when you give up the world. This type of level of meditation, it's when you're actually, you've given up the world. It mentions in Bhagavad Gita, you're in the Himalayas, you're celibate, you know, detached from family, you're sitting in a particular place in a particular way. this type of meditation is for a prolonged period of time without break. That's what this practice is being recommended. And to get to that stage, the Yoga Sutras, and we'll discuss that later, mentions very practical things. Again, this Ashtanga Yoga that he mentions, there's five stages before you really come to yoga or real equanimity of the mind. And they begin with Yam and Niyam, progressively. Yam, there's moral restraints. The first control of the mind is how you deal with others, nonviolence. You don't. It's progressive. If you don't begin there, you can't go anyplace else. You can't be a yogi. You can't have any level of equanimity of mind if you're grossly or subtly violent to others, exploitive. You can't. It doesn't happen. It's progressive. Then yam, niyam, then moral observances, how you deal with others. So this is a very, very high state practice. And so let me describe this verse. So he mentioned there's two levels of renunciation. One is indifference towards sensual objects of the world and of the celestial world. What you see here, an attachment for what you could get in the future. Now this is a higher level of detachment stemming from indifference to the very gunas themselves. You're just not in this world. More and more you read this, you can understand what this practice of yoga and meditation was. It was very serious business, and it was meant for a stage of life where one was extremely renounced. That basically, it's right there in the Yoga Sutras. To really get the results of this practice. Had a nice talk with Kasturba, describing what the practice of bhakti does. He presented one way to present it, but I think there's other ways to elaborate it, how, you know, bhakti, rather than just rejecting the mind completely, is really molding the mind, almost as a facsimile of the soul, and the soul is a mood of service. You mold the mind, really, but in the same sense, in karma yoga, you're basically doing the same thing, but we can discuss that. So here he's stating that this higher and this is the ultimate level of renunciation, and it stems from this purushakataya, awareness of the soul. When you're abiding in the soul, complete loss of interest in all material things. And that kind of loss of interest in material things, you know, it's can only take place when you attain something superior. So even in this yoga process, this real depth of renunciation, this super indifference, when you're abiding in the pure nature of the soul, which is pleasurable. And therefore, that verse in Bhagavad Gita, Vishyavani Vartante, Niraharasya Dayana, Raso Rabjam Rasopya, Param Drisvan Vartate. Okay. So this is really a high state of goodness, because passion and ignorance taints the consciousness that's filtered through the mind in a way that it pulls it away from the soul. That's what passion and ignorance do. It taints the consciousness, because the consciousness, we're perceiving things as long as we're embodied through the mind. The mind is like an instrument by which we see. It's just like glasses. You're looking through a microscope. You know, you're viewing something through something else. You're even seeing yourself through the mind. So when the mind is in this shape of passion, intense action, and restlessness, and ignorance, you know, lethargy, then and even when it's subtly in that condition, when the consciousness fills through the mind, it gives a perception that's very different from the self. It's just like you look in a mirror. When the mirror is clean and the mirror is in its, you know, the proper position, you see yourself. And as soon as it's distorted, as soon as it's dirty, then what you see is tainted. So you look through the mind, and passion and ignorance has transformed the mind. It gives you an image of yourself that's very much different from the pure soul. So really, when these gunas are stilled and the mind's natural nature of sattva, then at that particular time, when the mind is in goodness, the mind can actually contemplate the real distinction between the modes of nature and the products of nature, the modes of nature, because everything is composed of nature. You can see that the modes, you can see everything is composed of the modes, and you can even see how your mind, the material mind, is composed of the modes, and then you can actually see that the soul is different. And that's the highest level of renunciation in this yogic process. And there's a difference between, I don't know if it's Vedanta or Gaudiya Vedanta, and this, because there, basically they come, you're free from all thought, but in the conception of Gaudiya Vedanta, there's a pure thought, there's a pure senses, that it's actually the nature of the soul. It's not that you just give up thought, you give up material thought, but there's actually spiritual nature that manifests. So this is the highest renunciation, because the renunciation of the most subtle thing, the modes of nature, and not just the gross manifestation of them, but the whole nature of the material world itself, which is to see something as separate from your soul. To see your soul as something different than what it is. The soul is pure consciousness, pure awareness. Our nature is not egotistical. Our nature is not to put ourselves in the center and to see everything as an object of our own desires or pleasure. You become completely... And, you know, in the Shastra and in the commentary, it's interesting because it quotes from the Bhagavatam as an example to show you how high this level of renunciation is. And it's an example of Jadabharata, this is a story in the Bhagavatam, of someone, and it's a very unique thing because he not only didn't engage in the world, but he engaged in a way that the world wouldn't engage with him. It's a certain type. It's called avadut. There's a person who's coming to this level of realization and realizes that he doesn't want to deal with the world and that the world will entangle him. And it's a kind of a certain antisocial position. It's not taken by everyone who achieves a level of perfection, but there's a certain person who goes towards that. And he acts antisocial. He just wants to get away from it. The story is kind of interesting. He was this great king. He was at a very, very high level. And he was in his meditation. His meditation became broken by attachment to a deer. He's a little calf. The mother dies. Something. He was brought external. And then somehow, doing that, he somehow died. And because he was meditating on the deer, which Bhagavad Gita, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tajantyante, whatever your nature is at time of death, you'll go. He takes this birth. But because he's at such a high level of meditation, when he took his birth as a deer, he could remember. So the deer just goes to the hermitages of sadhus, so he can hear more and more about the nature of the world and how you should become renounced. And then he takes birth again. He takes birth in this Brahmin family, a very high birth, but he doesn't want to get involved because he's remembering what happened. Now he doesn't. He was so high and almost achieved this highest level, and then, because again, it's prolonged time, and you are meditating, and you can't break it on that level of achieving perfection. At the very end, and somehow or other, because renunciation is not enough. This is the story of Sobari Muni. He was the great sage that was meditating in the water, and then he saw some fish, and then copulating, and then it brought some past samskaras from the subconscious came up, and then got married and had 100 wives, something, some story. So, but the idea is, it's very subtle. This kind of path, it's very, very subtle. So he didn't want to take any chances this time. So his behavior was antisocial. But he was at that level because when the king, Nita Palakin, he said, "Oh, this person is big and strong, and he's useless." So so the king had the palanquin, but because of his high level of consciousness, when he just saw some ants, he didn't want to step on the ants. There's no selfishness in him. We can see ourselves. Oh, some insects are disturbing us. Exterminate them. You know, we have that. And sometimes I'm amazed. People are disturbed by just some kill them all. it's a type of. So on the exact, he's very sensitive. So he couldn't walk in pace, and the king became so upset, started yelling at him. "You're dumb. You're ignorant. You're foolish." Because at that level, he looked at the king and he spoke transcendental knowledge. He said, "If you think that that's what I am, I agree with you." Because the body is just dull, inert, etc. But he had no connection. Anyway, this verse concludes Patanjali's definition of yoga that was given in the second verse, Chitta Vritti Nirodha. Verses 5 to 12 discuss the vrittis, the fluctuations of the mind. And 13 to 16 describe Nirodha. So now we have completed the definition of yoga. Are there any questions?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna, Gail. Greetings from Moscow.
Yeah, I just wanted to know if I got this right now. The two levels of, I think, detachment or renunciation.
Yeah.
I think one is when you don't have any craving of what's before you. It's the second level when you don't even crave that which, is not at hand. Is that the second level?
No, that's...
Okay.
But if you didn't understand it, that's both the first level.
Oh, that's both first. Okay.
Yeah, it's not craving. And then there's something that's more...
Or indifference. Is that it? Indifference?
No, indifference is... The beginning is also indifferent. Renunciation is always described here as indifferent. There's no craving.
Okay.
But there's something that's... The second level here said... higher than, well, actually it did say here, it said higher than renunciation is indifference not only to the objects but to the gunas, to even the, to anything material, the whole material realm.
Oh yeah, like distinction and
the whole material realm you're indifferent to, because, and this stems from the, when you actually realize the soul. Let me see, it says, Vyas states that this higher and ultimate level of renunciation referred to in this verse stems from awareness of the soul. Complete loss of all material things can only take place when the yogi attains something different. So this is complete indifference. And the first stage is also indifference, but maybe there's some subtle attachment to the body or the mind or your identity, or, you know, this is complete indifference to anything that comes from matter. The other is that you're not, perhaps the other one is you're not craving any objects, but you still have some conception of the self as different from the soul. You may be attached to that. This is complete indifference to anything material.
So the first stage is indifference to anything gross, and the second stage would be indifference to anything also subtle.
I wouldn't even say that's correct either, because in the other one, you're indifferent also to honor, dishonor, etc. Like this. This is perhaps when it comes even to the level of identity. You can still be attached perhaps to, maybe this would be one example, you can still be attached to your identity. You can be indifferent to the objects, but maybe you're still attached to the fact that you're a woman or a man. You know, but you can still not crave any objects at a certain level. And I'm just saying there's a second stage of indifference that anything material, even identity, you're completely detached from. And that's the example of Jutta Bart. He's not only detached from the cravings of the objects, but any social interaction at all. So it's something even, it's complete indifference. And that complete indifference can only come when you're on the platform of the soul. I know most of the people, probably 90%, are within the Gaudiya, you know, Krishna conscious tradition. So, you know, we don't seek it in that way. We try to mold our lives, you know, as a kind of a positive conception of spiritual identity, not to eradicate it, not to eradicate thoughts, but to have, because at this level, you know, on this yoga, you have klishta, you have good thoughts and favorable thoughts, right? Favorable thoughts are insight and spiritual realization. And in this type of process that Patanjali is recommending, you even give up the good thoughts at a higher level. There's no conception of anything outside yourself. You're just like abiding in the spiritual nature, where again the difference in the conception, at least that I hold in the tradition that I come from, is there are thoughts, there's thoughts of God and our love for God and our, you know, things in relationship to that, etc. So I would say, Gail, it's very nice that you asked this question. I think it'd be pretty clear to me too. One is it's an absence of craving. And you are indifferent to the object of senses. That's the first one, either what's before you or what you can't perceive. And this is anything. This is a higher level, you know, of anything born of material, even your identity, even your social interactions. It's complete indifference.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay, Maharaj. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else like to ask a question, say hello? Hare Krishna, anybody else out there today?
Maharaj, I just want to say thanks for the class tonight. Thanks for
calling
all the way from Moscow.
Hey, what's that? All glories to us.
No, thanks for calling in all the way from Moscow.
Oh, I thought you said all glories to Moscow. I thought, wow.
Well, I guess that too.
Yeah, it's somehow I figured it out, and Jagadish got me a phone card, and I could kind of, but it's really enlivening here. I mean, the first day was just full on, you know, and I guess the kind of the level of appreciation, you know, somehow I guess that by the Well, it's just an interesting phenomenon. Somehow I knew some people from Russia, and practically every minute I'm going to be going someplace, meeting devotees, and giving lectures outside. It's interesting. There's a receptive audience for sure. Okay. Okay, thanks, Mahamuni.
Okay.
Nice
okay.
to hear your voice. Okay. Muni, you still on?
Yeah, I'm right here.
How would you describe this distinction between the two levels of renunciation from hearing the class?
I'm not entirely, just one second, please. I'm sorry, Tristan, I'll be right there. I kind of feel like I'd have to look at it and think about it for a while, Marge. It's very subtle.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not clear.
Okay,
what you said to Gail sounds fine to me, but it seems so subtle. Gosh, it's hard to really get to wrap
it. From what I'm looking at here, it is very, very subtle. And I think that's why the example of Jutta Bard is given, to show the complete level, you know?
Yeah.
He's not attached to anything. He doesn't even socially function. So it seems, yeah, okay.
Okay, thank you, Marshall.
Okay, thanks. Anyone else? Like to chime in? Okay. Thank you all.
Hare Krishna.